Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And on this week's Unspun, boy, do we have our work cut out for us. There is so much political movement, and it's almost like a shell game going on in City Hall in Vancouver. We have things to discuss at the provincial level, federal level, and all the way down to the U.S. And yes, it is how it impacts us here in Canada. All on
Unspun.
Where to begin? I think we start with a new deputy mayor in Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, there's always a deputy mayor, just so you know.
Yeah. It's always.
It used to be a month for month. They would switch them every month. Everybody would get a chance to be the deputy mayor.
Yeah.
I think I was one for 1 month, and they stopped giving it to me for some strange reason.
Uh-huh. Well,
I know. And it doesn't mean anything. It's just there is extra money. I think it's like an extra $300 or something. But you get to be at all these, you know,
fancy function,
rubber chicken lunches and that kind of stuff. So for the mayor, who, you know, one of the 10 sends the deputy mayor. So it's really just a formality. But yeah, they announced, made it a very official that for the rest of the term, they did this with Raymond Louis too, actually, in the last of his year when he was with Vision, Sarah Kirby Young would be the deputy mayor till the end of this term, which would be less than a year from now, which is
right. And do you think this is a signal of some sort?
Well, you know, Sarah Kirby Young is renowned for being quite ambitious, politician. That's a nice way to say it, maybe. The polling I've seen for the mayor, on many polls that I've seen now, are really terrible for him. Terrible for ABC generally, but he's polling close to single digits, certainly lower than 20%. You saw that, I think it was Main Street poll came out this week, Vancouver Conservatives, a party that doesn't really exist or have a leader, but it appears John Cooper might be that guy, based on all his tweets, is polling like by far the furthest ahead. So they're eating away at ABCs. Then you got the Vancouver Liberals, which is Kareem, polling second. And then third, I think, is Greens. And then, you know, way down the bottom is ABC, like fifth or sixth or seventh or something like that. So it's a bad sign, and so it could be an exit strategy that Ken Sim is putting together for himself as who will be the next leader of ABC, whether they'll have an open process and whether it will be Sarah Kirby Young and whether that's a good idea, because some of the polling I've seen for the candidates, or the current council candidates, she ranks last, almost last. Actually, the last place on some polling I've seen is Peter Meisner is last, which we can talk about that in a bit. But Sarah is second to last as far as popularity.
So why have an exit strategy, really, when your polling is so poor? I mean, I know that sounds like a crazy question, but I'm kind of a little bit crazy when it comes to the pomp and circumstance of politics. It's like,
if
the polling says this and the voters say that, there's your exit strategy. You're out. Bye-bye.
Yes, it's something that John Horgan did. We talked about it last week, actually, with David Eby. He groomed him to be his replacement.
Horgan never wanted to be premier. Like,
no, I know.
So I kind of got why he kind of went, okay, guys, as I said, I'd like to go back rooting for my lacrosse team and taking care of my cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, but he had a transition for power, which was David Eby.
Yeah.
Gordon Campbell did not, and that ended badly for the BC Liberals.
Right.
You know,
but
so,
also,
well, not bad.
Sorry,
I mean, Christie won, but, you know, it was very chaotic time.
It was bumpy. It was bumpy. But with Horgan, he was riding high when he was pointing to David Eby. Like, he was living la vida loca when it came to polling at that point.
Yeah, but he was sick. So he had a decision based on health. So,
yeah.
An unusual circumstance there. But so, you know, we talked about Craig Hodge in Coquitlam.
Coquitlam, yeah.
Richard Stewart, endorsed by Richard Stewart. We don't know what's happening in Richmond, but there are people gunning for the mayor's job. He's not coming back. Who, you know, has he dubbed anybody yet? No. Kashid,
could
it be?
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty common that there's a process, like if there's a leader currently and they're leaving voluntarily, they'll work on making sure that transition of power for the stuff that they wanted to achieve can continue to be achieved. So whatever that is for Ken Sim.
And that's my point, really, is, I mean, it's almost and with this is with due respect to Sarah Kirby Young and others who put themselves out there to be elected officials, with how terrible the polling numbers are for the current mayor right now in Vancouver, does his endorsement hurt more than it helps?
Probably. So that's why the process will be interesting. If they have an open nomination. You know, ABC is a one-off, much like the previous mayor, who was an independent and then started the party. Is it a one-off, one-term, you know, camp in a mayor and party, potentially? Very unusual. But it's possible. I mean, Cope really lasted in 2002 with Larry Campbell as the mayor. They lasted, I think, less than a year before they broke into two and as a party. And they got nine of the seats, I think, or eight or nine of the seats in 2002. And then
right.
they splintered because they couldn't keep it together. And Larry Campbell said, nah, I'm going to be a senator. He left. His transition to power, though, was with support, you know, with a few of the previous Cope people, like Larry. It was Larry, the friends of Larry, and then it became friends of Gregor, and then it became Vision Vancouver. It was this no party name, then it became Vision Vancouver, and then dominated politics for 11 years.
For a long time.
So yeah. They did have a transition of power. So it does work, because part of the reason is if you put somebody in place that the community that has money, and this would be center-right, as opposed to the union money that the other side gets and support. This would be an ability for them to raise the funding, say, okay, we got this person, whoever that might be, who's going to be replacing Ken, and here's who they're here. Let's put our money and support behind that person. So, because it does come down to money. You look at how much money ABC raised in the last election. It was $2 million something. So it's really going to be about who raises the most money. You see Kareem from the BC Liberal, Vancouver Liberal, saying he's raised $1 million. I don't know about that. I've talked to a lot of people and they have said they've not given him money. So I'm not sure who's giving him the money. So we'll see. But I think at the end of the day, you can see by the number of candidates now announcing their leadership and the number of parties that they're all seeing the polling, as I've talked about for several months, that there's an opportunity here for change in 2026. And I think Ken Sim might be waking up to that fact that can he turn around? I mean, a year is a lifetime of politics. We've talked about that all the time.
Yeah.
A lot can change. The zero budget could work. So he probably will hold it tight to his chest until, you know, February, March, and then he'll make a decision then. He'll see how his polling continues. They do their own polling. We don't know what that looks like, but certainly the external public polling that we've all seen is not good for ABC or for Ken Sim.
And Councillor Pete Fry is not ruled out running, but basically, I think I told you last week that the clip that I had heard him say is he just doesn't want to split the left. So he's got to see what the field looks like, but he has party backing and he's just got to make the decision. And then at council this week, he put forward a motion that feels like, I don't want to say stunt. There's probably a better word for it, but we'll use stunt just because we're on Spun.
Yeah.
So why not? It feels a bit like he's looking at what is happening in North America's largest city, in New York City, where Mamdani is really rallying the youth vote, and the Fry tabled a motion to reduce the municipal voting age to 16. And I'm telling you, it blew up my inbox. I'm filling in for Mike Smith. And I was really surprised because I was ready for everybody to rail against it without question. But it was pretty balanced, interestingly enough. And I asked my kid, both of us have 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, just about. Mm-hmm. Like, they're within now days of voting age. And I asked last night, and with the caveat of my 17 3/4-year-old is in post-secondary doing political science. So maybe he's more engaged than most his age, who knows? But I just said point blank without really any context, what do you think about somebody floating the idea of reducing the voting age to 16? Bad idea, good idea, what do you think? And he goes, well, if 70-year-olds can vote, I don't see why 16-year-olds can't. Like, he threw down and I looked at him like, ooh, you're so lucky you didn't say 50-year-olds. Well, but he was like, There are misinformed grown-ups and misinformed teens, right? And so he had that argument of, and then the new majority guest that I had, Amanda Monday, who has been talking about we need more engagement. You and I talk all the time about how municipal elections get, what, 33%? But even like the municipal elections are 36% of eligible voters, like not even.
It's not much of a mandate, is it?
No.
Yeah, there's two things. Yeah, so I think that, I mean, why not? 16 years old, you can let him drive a car. But, and I think your son's point is correct. Not the older part, that just hurts.
It hurts our feelings. Being six, seven.
If you're 16 or 17, I mean, I know when I was 16 or 17, I was super engaged in politics, always have been, always interested, always researching, always watching.
Yeah.
So I would have known exactly what to do and how to vote back then. And based on the trend of how many people vote based on age group, you know, they're not going to show up. You can make it 2 years old, whatever. It doesn't, it's basically the number of, the age you are is the percentage that shows up generally of the overall amount of people that show up. So,
Maybe it'll get the lazy people off their couch, though. The people that are like, we got this.
They'll never get off their couch. They never do. No. You got to mandate the vote. So that's the motion that you should have done. You're right, though. It is a stunt. I mean, I'm very familiar with, you know, motions that are kind of stunty, because that's what I did a lot of, just to push the party into a corner, the party in power into a corner, and give me an opportunity to speak to a specific issue. And that's kind of what, you know, Pete's doing. But I would say that right now Pete's in negotiation with the other three parties, the left side parties, to see if he can have a collective where he would be the leader of this collective of left-wing parties, and they wouldn't run candidates against him. And if he does that and can pull that off, he has a very good chance of winning mayor for sure.
But splitting the left gives a direct path to a Sarah Kirby Young, or
no, not really, because there's 8 zillion parties on the center right, so God knows what could happen. Talk about splitting, that's what's happening right now. So
Will they all be there in a year is probably the good question.
That's the ultimate question.
That's what we got to see. The other thing that happened in council this week that I wanted your take on was Councillor Sean Orr put a motion forward about adjustment to the empty homes tax, which I feel like it just came to be and has always been simultaneously, but it's been 8 years. It was Vision Vancouver. It was Gregor Robertson who brought in the empty homes tax. Yeah. 3% tax on your second property if you don't rent it out for 6 months of the year or more, long-term rentals. Mm-hmm. And having Councillor Orr on, he said he wants to up that to 5%. What do you think about that?
Well, based on polling related to the empty homes tax and the short-term, all those taxes that was created when I was there, which I was opposed to. I don't like taxes. I don't care what you call them. Generally, when you start taxing, you just stick it into general revenue and it doesn't do what you said you would do with it.
Right.
So it's all BS. But popularity for these taxes, these what I see is basic racist policy, a lot of them, because they're, you know, especially the empty homes tax, it was really a vote against a lot of the Asian migration that we're seeing or Asian purchasing of real estate in Vancouver, mostly Chinese. I think it's racist based, in my opinion. Does it work? I don't think so. Is it popular? Yes. So whatever, you know, so he sees that as a popular opportunity to raise his profile. You know, the question really should be asked is, does it do the job it achieved, which is to build homes? And, you know, it costs $30 million to operate and it raises $30 million. So I don't know, whatever, you're making a zero. It's a PR stunt, always has been.
Over 8 years, I had the number today, over 8 years, it has raised $169 million. That can only be, just saying, but 8 times 30, right? So, and the money's raised can only be used for affordable housing initiatives.
How many houses can you build for?
But I don't see that it has had a great impact to do that. I would argue that it hasn't really done what the intent, and I actually brought up the provincial empty homes and vacancy tax, you know, where it only applies to some places, like what, because he's like, it's very popular and it's like all across BC. And I'm like,
wherever NDP don't run.
Yeah. I'm like, why isn't it in Belle Province? Oh, well, I mean, you know, it's not in the places where the wealthy like to have their extra places. Like, I get it. You don't want your cabin in the middle of nowhere that's not even on a sewer system, or have, you know, a fire hall at the end of the road, like that doesn't have the services that come with the taxes that one pays. Like, I get that part, but all of Whistler Blackcomb up that Sea to Sky, like, seems like a questionable exemption.
Gulf Islands.
That's what I said right off the hop. That's the most egregious to me. It's the Gulf Islands to say that we need that because we don't have hotels on a Gulf Island.
All these NDPers living in co-ops in the Lower Mainland, and they own cottages on Salt Spring Island. Give me a break. Whatever.
It's a little bit frustrating. Talking about working here and living elsewhere.
Yes.
How do you feel about people working for the city of Vancouver and living in Kelowna?
Elected. So this is, I alluded to this earlier, Peter Meisler, the former...
Montague. You said Meisner. Sorry, Peter Meisner. This is not Montague.
Yes, I got two people mixed into it. Two counselors.
You got your hands mixed up there. There's been a lot of Peter talk today.
Yeah, Montague. He was a former communications head of Vancouver Police. You know, so he was represented Vancouver, I guess. But it turns out, according to CTV, he's never lived in Vancouver. He lived in North Van, which is well known. I mean, now we all, if you didn't know that, I can't help you. But everybody knew that. And if you voted for him, why? Because he doesn't live, to me, I don't care what party you're with. If you don't live in the city of Vancouver, I have a real problem with you running for office. And, you know, then it turns out CTV uncovered that he actually sold his place in North Van. The clip is just painful to watch if you see it. And he bought a place in the Okanagan. You know, clearly he's probably around maybe a bit younger than me, so I guess he's planning his retirement. And then, but he says he's renting in North Van. But I'm like, why didn't you rent a place in Vancouver?
Vancouver. You would have cover. You would have cover.
So he obviously is not going to run again. I don't see how he possibly could. So he doesn't give two shits. You know, he's done. So he's out. So there he goes. Now you're down for poor old Ken Sim. Catch a Ken Sim gone. He's lost he's lost all his park board. He's like the whole night. We'll get to the park board in a minute, but it's not looking good. And you know, to not have incumbents running again, and it's just a real problem. So it's huge opportunity, more opportunity next election.
But it's opportunity, but it's also a recipe for complete and utter instability, which when we talk about park board, I mean, there was just an entire ballot roll of names that nobody had ever heard of before. It was like fresh face, new blood. Mm-hmm. They're all coming in, and they have been as dysfunctional, if not more so, than the previous park board, which is saying a lot because the previous park board was resoundingly voted out. Like, bye. And now we've got the current park board that a large swath of voting public in Vancouver, like, we're done here. We're done. Let's get enough of this bureaucracy, enough with our parks looking run down and in disrepair, with the exception of the handful of parks. And it's just everything that moving at a snail's pace. And hey, we're just raising parking costs at every parking community center across the city of Vancouver to infill for just the waste. That is, my rant is real because I'm so frustrated. We covered the fact that finally we were getting some movement. There was going to be a referendum. We were going to have an opportunity to settle it once and for all. Do you want the park board or do you not want the park board? And now, no referendum. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the missteps all the way along. My God. I mean, first of all, Ken, what are you doing? First of all, to be clear to everybody, we might have said get rid of the park board because we were so frustrated. But, we also would have argued if you can fix it, great, whatever. We just want better parks and community centers. Like, whatever. Just fix it. I don't care.
Do something.
Unfortunately, Kensum, who came in with his massive majority on park board, threw it all away because he decided, without consulting his own park board members from his own party, that he was going to start a process of eliminating the park board as a elected authority. Created a whole division within his own party. And so then defections. He lost control of park board for the next 4 years, right out of the gate. So that was bad because he could have done so much. There's so much he could have done with that majority. If he got them in and said, let's do this together, figure out a way to and at least solve those problems.
Or let's not do that.
Yeah. Or let's amalgamate the engineering or whatever, anything. And then
the
band,
get the train going.
And then at the end, they could have said, okay, then the park board themselves, which is the way it always should have been, should have put the vote on the table and said, we want to send this to province to eliminate the park board. That the vote should have come from the park board, not from the mayor's office. So
Mayor, right.
That just a misstep there, which created all we talk about. ABC might have done they have done some good things. They have, I will admit that there have been some good moves on their part in the city. But you know what? It's really hard to remember them.
I was going to say, do you want to name a few?
Really hard for them to communicate them because they get so caught up in all this other stuff that people want to talk about. And so you have that problem. And then now, which is one of the things I've been saying since the moment, soon after I'd heard through my connections in Victoria, were saying that the NDP were very concerned about the legalities and the relationship with the First Nations and the unceded, as was approved and authorized as a term by the council that I was on, that we would use the unceded terminology, which means basically we don't own this land.
There's no deal.
Which the potential legal implications of removing a government body. And by the way, the First Nations have been supportive of ABC's move to do this publicly, but the ABC, through, I believe, their legal side and the Attorney General is the person who's come out strong about saying, you know what, this is not a go because you have not consulted with First Nations. And the ABC, we did, we asked them, they said they're cool with it. But I'm thinking that on the back end of this, like I've always said, is there the legal department, believe me, legal departments for politicians, they love to stop all the good ideas. It's the worst. They come in and they say, oh, you can't do that. So sometimes you got to say the legal.
This is problematic.
Like I think of my accountant, I know it sounds like a crazy idea and it's going to cost a lot of money, but I think it's going to make me a lot of money. And they're on the books, so it doesn't look good. I'm like, yeah, on the books. But sometimes you have to let a person, entrepreneur, do their thing. So that's asking your legal department sometimes in government is the worst thing you could do for getting shit done. So
yeah, that's like going to HR and expecting them to look out for you. Sorry, but it's true. HR works for the company, not for the employee. It's like true. The lawyers. The lawyers work for the legal ramifications of what might happen, not like what you think will
that's
be best.
Right.
That's my point.
Right.
There are great people who work in legal. There are great people that work in HR. 100%. But so the I way think, these are built is to say no first.
Yes. So I think the legal department said to the NDP and they're caucusing and they're even probably to, well, they usually have to present this to everybody saying, this is the problem with what's going on. And, you know, this information has to be made to all the elected officials generally, especially legal issues that these politicians might get themselves stuck into. When you're talking about land ownership, and we could talk about Richmond and that whole stuff as well.
I
just think that they've been told, don't do it. Don't approve this. Don't do it. And so they finally admitted that basically this week by saying to Vancouver, without saying that, that's what a law department said, but the head lawyer for BC is basically saying, no, you didn't consult First Nations. That's her, what she's saying. But it's basically, it's like, we can't change the governance of the park board without saying, do you want it, First Nations? And that is the issue. If they'll say, we want it.
Of course they will. And then there will be multiple nations discussing whose it actually is. Because the overlap in the city, there's no clear path here. And it gets heated and it gets polarizing. I mean, that's where we're at just as society, I think, even beyond just the politics of it. And the Cowichan land rights debacle that is happening in Richmond right now. I don't know if you've had a chance to even look over the legal reading of the 900-page ruling that did catch the province very much off guard, and certainly beyond the ruling caught the province off guard because they didn't think it was going to go that way, is what the experts tell me. And then the people who actually own the property in question were the last to find out. And at an information meeting this week, 500 people showed up and they were all absolutely outraged at the mayor of Richmond, the outgoing mayor of Richmond, Malcolm Brody. And his excuse was like, hey, don't come for me. That was the responsibility of the First Nation. It was like,
well, finger pointing for sure. I think this whole issue of reconciliation, which we can't confuse with land ownership, which is a whole other discussion. Many people don't realize that in BC, the word unceded, we don't have treaties with most of our First Nations. Most provinces do. We are very unusual that we never signed treaties 100 years ago. And that's why
it took that long to get west, though.
Yeah,
a little bit. It just took that long to get. And by the time it got here, they were like,
yeah. So we have this problem where we never negotiated anything, and as a result, we're negotiating now. And Gordon Campbell started the process, put up the parameters of that process, negotiated some really good deals up in Nanishka and others, Tawasin. But then it stopped. And that process, for whatever reason, I think the NDP thought they could do it differently, it stopped. And so we haven't had any really good agreements since then. And as a result, you live in this limbo. And so anything like this, where the courts decide on a situation because we haven't created an agreement, of course. And that means, can they fight? This guy goes back to the empty homes tax. How far can the whoever is fighting against this go financially and legally? Can you go, if you go all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, how far do you go? How much money that costs? How long that takes? This is a neighbor.
Takes a long time.
Exactly.
Exactly, which is a non-starter for so many, right?
The meaningfulness of this is huge, and the ramifications legally, I think, are, and that's the issue, is what does this mean for every single area of this province? I think it's very significant, and while the agreement specifically on this land might be, they might say, well, it's very specific to this specific area. It had, legal...
But even the nations here, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh, particularly, I think it is, is it the Tsleil-Waututh? And either the Musqueam or the Tsleil-Waututh are saying, hey, whoa, Cowichan. That's ours. Like, again, there's no direct path. The thing that really I feel is heavy is that this is knocking back the meaningful piece of reconciliation that is so important. I mean, because they're having spent this last week on the radio talking about this and having some people call in or write in, and just the thought that it's like these people, it's like, okay, hold on a second.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Like,
you can't say that.
But it's the but it's mine argument does not hold water if you do a little bit of historical digging, right? But to your point, I mean, there is reconciliation in that. We acknowledge the fact that we pushed the people who were here when colonizers, when settlers,
right?
We pushed treatment. And when you had a treaty that was negotiated, which is lots of other parts of Canada, there were deals made, monies changed hands and property changed hands to the degree that everybody felt was a win-win. I'll use the Métis in Manitoba as an example. Right? Nothing's perfect. However, those deals were not struck here. And that this is the result, is that it gets messy and divisive and in some instances racist all the way into our legislature, which I find, terribly unnerving. But the temperature of what's happening in Richmond with the land rights decision, the Cowichan land rights decision in Richmond, I think is doing a disservice to everybody. Like, I think it's just been handled so poorly by the NDP, and they want to stay now. They're asking for a stay so they can more robustly defend, which means, oops, we thought we didn't really have to defend it. Now we do. Like, it's a debacle. It's a debacle. And I really feel for the homeowners that have their entire life savings in their homes. It's not their fault that no treaty was negotiated 150 years ago, but it's also not the fault of generations later of Cowichan tribes who feel that this was their ancestral land. Like, there's no way of denying it. Denialism is not going to fix the problem, I guess, is my unspun perspective, but it's a heavy one. It's heavy.
I mean, basically you need to get back to negotiating with these nations to come up with treaties that everybody's happy with. And there are lots of good examples already that have happened in this province that have helped the prosperity of these First Nations, as well as the community around them, First Nations and not. So get to work. Stop. Like, it's all just being politicized as opposed to talking about,
right?
We're not going, the non-First Nations, we're not leaving. So we got to find a solution for this. Let's start talking about that as opposed to all this other weird stuff at the legislation provincially. Like, what is going, like, they've made some decisions that are just kind of like, what? As opposed to focusing on negotiation. And it's a lot of work. Yeah. You need to have a team, and they got to be working on it. And it's going to take 100 years.
And it's not an easy conversation. Well, didn't Gord Downie say it's going to take us seven generations? But
that's
the people
reconciliation,
who...
I would say, yeah. But
right. Yeah. But the people who are currently living on the property in question now have renewal of their mortgage uncertain because the banks are like, who owns it?
And then, as you mentioned, some of those emails you got, it creates hate. And that's like, oh, God, this is where we're here. We go again. You know, as opposed to, you know, logical negotiation process, land, you know, it's just get to work.
Stop. Yeah.
Exactly. Everybody stop with this and get to work, and then we'll all be fine.
It'll be fine. On that note, hey, fun fact, don't ever tell somebody who's blocked you on Twitter to unblock you on the radio. That's not cool. I had that happen to me today. Oh, why do you block me? I'm like,
I'm always surprised some people who block me. I'm like, what? Like, why are they?
But I had somebody, I'll read you this email. We've got just enough time, I think, for me to read you this email. Or did I keep it? I don't even know.
You block a lot of people, though.
Right. But so what?
No, like, I know. I don't block. I block Elon Musk. That's it.
There you go. I had this guy basically ask me, like, how do you justify blocking people on Twitter when you have a job on radio? I'm like, I can block whoever I want.
Yeah, hate is hate. If you're hating me, I don't need to talk to you.
I can block you because I don't like your tone of voice. I don't. Yeah. And frankly, I like blocking people who tag me and stuff so that they can amplify their hate. No.
It's like you get invited. It's like asking, okay, you got invited to as a broadcaster to a dinner party to a bunch of a room full of people you hate. Would you go to that? No. Of course not. No,
perfectly said. That's why I'm in your room, George Affleck. George
_
Affleck is where you find George Affleck on your Twitter at George_Affleck. I am at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on TikTok. We're everywhere. And we're everywhere available for you to block. You can block us anywhere and everywhere if you like. Or you can like and subscribe to Unspun Podcast. Go to unspunpodcast.com. Anywhere you get your podcast, you can find Unspun Podcast with the two of us. Tell your friends. We love doing this every Thursday,
Rachel? Share the knowledge.
Share the knowledge. From our heads to you.